TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I wanted you to feel at home today, so I brought you some pizza, some mac and cheese, and even a bottle of your favorite whiskey.
Oh, Chris, thank you so much. I'm drinking the favorite whiskey right now in my Enterprise A old-fashioned glass. It's fantastic, so I really appreciate this. Where did you pick this up?
I was just reading your mind, so I just knew. I knew what all your favorites were, and then I replicated them.
So. Okay. Wow, you can read minds that far away. I'm not comfortable at all.
So Matthew, tell me, how far from the end of Lord of the Rings are you? Oh, wait, you didn't tell me about that, did you? Sorry.
I gotta go. But it was great to talk to you, Chris.
Yeah, it was. All right. Well, everyone, while Matthew leaves, I'm going to talk about the sixth episode of season 3 of Enterprise as we continue our 30th anniversary rewatch today. And here is a quick rundown of the story. Contacted telepathically by an alien who says he might be able to help find the Zindi, Hoshi decides to take advantage of the opportunity by packing her nicest dresses and high heels for a stay at his mysterious castle. At first, she's happy to be his guest and even enjoys a lavish dinner of her Earth favorites, despite being creeped out by his mind reading. But the mood is soured when she discovers the graves of past guests just outside, leaving little more to do until the Enterprise returns but translate a book written in an undecipherable alien language while staying comfortable in leisure wear. So, Matthew, the starting point for me here has to be just that I'm pretty sure, now I don't know the background, but I'm pretty sure that this episode was born when someone in the writer's room said, "What if we did Beauty and the Beast in space?" And the other said, "Be our guest."
Yeah, it's exactly. It's, yeah. Bonjour. You know, it clearly is very much inspired by the idea of Beauty and the Beast, although the idea of this beast is also telepathic and could make mm-hmm. himself appear as mm-hmm. human if he mm-hmm. wants to, which is somewhat creepy. So I guess it leaves you with the thought of, like, how do I ever know what I'm seeing is real, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And before we kind of dive into, you know, anything about whether this works or whatever, one of the things that I find about this episode, and I can see why, you know, this got pitched and why they actually decided to make this episode, is because I think they were thinking this is a way to kind of test where Hoshi is as a character. You know, now this being the third season, she's been a character who's been somebody who's been very trepidatious about being in space, and she's come a long way. And so if we leave her on this planet by herself with an alien, what then would be the repercussions for that character, and how could we maybe show how this character, you know, has progressed and grown? I'm guessing, and I'll be honest, I think this is me giving the benefit of the doubt to the writers here, because let's not beat around the bush. This is not a good episode. I don't think either of us really enjoy this episode. But does that...
Well, I enjoy all Hoshi episodes.
Well,
so just
yes,
for
this
that
is true.
Reason,
you do.
I do enjoy
do.
This episode. But yeah, but I know what you mean.
But I guess that's a great question, though, then, that I have for you is do you think that's what they were thinking about this episode as to why they might have... decided to, do you think that's kind of what the thought process was behind this? Okay, this will be a good way to explore the character of Hoshi. Or am I giving them too much credit is what I'm asking.
I think you might be giving them too much credit in this situation. I think that it helps the character in the end because Hoshi comes out of this situation stronger, I feel.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think she does.
But I think the way they present her at the beginning of the episode does a bit of disservice to the character development that we've already gotten up to this point. Like, I don't think Hoshi would be this naive. I remember watching it to prepare for this, and I was just thinking, I'm really glad that Hoshi's not on dating apps because she's just going to like fall for every story that someone feeds her trying to arrange to meet her. It feels like that at one point in this story. And it's really not until she goes outside and she finds the graves of Tarkin's past partners that it really hits her what's going on.
Yeah.
And I think that Hoshi would not be that easily deceived at this point. And now when she goes in and they sit down for the dinner, she does start to find things to be a bit creepy. But yeah, I don't know. The evolution of the story, and when I say evolution, I mean the progression of the story. And what we see, I feel like they're trying, like they had this idea for what they wanted to do visually, the idea of the castle kind of playing off of Beauty and the Beast. And the premise of the story plays off of a Voyager episode to some extent. There's Alter Ego, where there's an alien that's kind of connecting with Tuvok in a similar way. It's not exactly the same story, but the idea isn't new. The telepathic element of it isn't really new. Of course, Beauty and the Beast is the most obvious thing visually here, but you could also see Phantom of the Opera in this or some other stories that we know of, right? So there's not a lot of original stuff going on here. It just feels more like they had this idea and they really wanted to do it, and it made sense for Hoshi to be the character. But I don't know. It's actually a quite creepy and troubling episode, to be honest.
Yeah. Now, and maybe this will sound strange. I don't have a problem with the episode being creepy and whatnot. I think you know that kind of fits with where we are in this part of space. So I think that part all works right. We just have to talk about the thing that really doesn't make this episode work. And what doesn't make this work is actually the way in which they portray and they clothe Hoshi. Because if Hoshi had gone down to this planet and stayed in her Starfleet uniform the entire time and or was wearing a pair of, you know, Enterprise branded sweats.
Yeah.
I think this would all make much more sense. But what they do is they try to make this too much like Beauty and the Beast without thinking of the ramifications for the character. And what it does is just mix all of the signals. Because if you're trying to send the signal that you're being reserved or whatever, what you wear has a big part of to do with that. And I don't think that this then works for Hoshi. Especially when she knows going down to the planet that this person can read her mind, right? And
I'm not sure she realizes before she goes down. I'm not sure she realizes the extent to which she can read her mind.
Yeah. Could be possibly the case, but I mean, he can at least there's some sort of telepathical connection, you know?
Yeah, that's so, you know. I mean, it's very clear because of, you know, Phlox and Sickbay, right?
And so, again, I think that's what's most problematic in the episode, and that's what really doesn't make it work, is because it just doesn't really fit the situation, and it doesn't fit I think, Hoshi at this point, right? We know Hoshi. Yes, we saw her on that adventure in Ryza, right? But that's a very safe place, and I think then makes sense for the character to be, you know, just herself and exploring and enjoying what Ryza has to offer. And yet here, this is the whole situation is creepy and weird and kind of scary. And there's no reason for her to kind of be portrayed in the way that she does. Now, I don't think that this is, I don't think that this is Linda Park's fault. I think it's just the writing of the episode. I think it's what the director's asking for. And just everything about that part of this just does not work.
Well, she doesn't play the character sexy. Like, she's not trying to be...
Which is the other problem with the choice, too. Is everything about it just seems to be really off.
Well, it goes back to my feeling that they wanted to do Beauty and the Beast in space, and they wanted the visual. So, you know, visually, I think this episode is quite nice. The castle, the interiors, the arboretum, like everything about it, visually, it's very well done. It's a very great episode.
It's a weird Harry Potter episode.
Yeah, well, this, by the way, is the first episode of Star Trek that ever aired in high definition.
Interesting.
And I think it's an interesting choice for it to be this one. I don't know if it was intentionally the first one because of this, but I think the set design that's going on here is a good episode to be aired in high definition.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But yeah, the thing is that, you know, she's not playing the character in a way, like she's not wearing these dresses and the high heels at all to try to attract or seduce this alien. It's actually the opposite. She's very cautious about what's going on. And then as the story goes on, she's really pushing back against him. But yet they continue to dress her in this way. And it's not the first time. You mentioned Ryza, but I can think of others. Like, I'm pretty sure in Vanishing Point, we see her brushing her teeth in the mirror and she's wearing a negligee, something like that. It's like, it's not the first time we've seen Hoshi wearing clothing like this, but I do think that going back to what I said at the beginning, where the setup does a bit of disservice to the character development of Hoshi up to this point, is that in this situation, Hoshi Sato would not be dressing this way. She would be approaching this as part of her mission, as part of the crew. And it just, yeah, there's this big disconnect between the reason she's there for the story and then what's actually happening there and the way that it's being presented from a costume, in particular, a costume point of view.
No, I completely agree. I think you're absolutely right in that. Again, what I think we're both saying is, this just doesn't work for who the character is or the situation she's in. You know, I think those other situations like Ryza, whatnot, that's the whole point of those episodes, right? Is for, I mean, my wife and I just watched Captain's Holiday. Captain Picard is himself wearing very little, you know, to all the ladies' delights. He's looks
kind of a tease, right?
Oh, my gosh, he looks fantastic.
Like that, but he's like, I'm busy with my book. You leave me alone.
but so, you know, right. I those episodes are for that. Right. And they're for our characters to metaphorically, at least for Picard, let their hair down and be able to experience something that they don't normally get to experience. Whereas this, the entire situation is in some ways threatening to Hoshi. And so, I don't know, you know, I'm married, I know I have a sister, I know plenty of women. I don't know any woman who is in a threatening situation like this who willingly then makes themselves be in a place where they're kind of making themselves more vulnerable than reserved. And so that's where it's just like somebody, there needed to be a woman in the writer's room here just to be like, excuse me, guys, but this is not what would happen.
Yeah, but see, that's what's odd about it. The story is written by Phyllis Strong. It's directed by Roxanne Dawson.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I don't get
it. You know, it was a different time. And the thing is, like, I don't think they're doing anything particularly risque or anything in this episode. But like you say, I think from the point of view of you feeling threatened, which Hoshi obviously by the middle of this episode feels very threatened.
Exactly, yeah.
You would expect some change in demeanor. Some, like, if yeah. I were Hoshi, yeah. I would change into my uniform and stay in that for the rest of the time that I'm there. So yeah, it just doesn't quite make sense. I guess the key is that the only people who might do that would be contestants on the other thing that this episode made me think of, a show called The Creepy Space Bachelor.
That's fantastic, Chris. The Creepy Space Bachelor. I love it.
Because otherwise, unless your goal is to win that show and get the rose, I don't know why you would continue to present yourself the way that she does through the episode.
I agree.
Yeah. So, I guess, so another thing we could talk about then is just what this episode does for the overall arc, because it feels a bit like a pit stop. So there were a couple things I wanted to talk about. One of them is that, going back to TOS, when they come down to the castle in the shuttle pod, and then when they open the doors and they go inside, it all reminds me of Cat's Paw a bit, especially the remastered version of Cat's Paw, which has stronger visuals.
Yes.
And then overall, it also has it's basically a standalone episode in the middle of this arc. And one thing that I do like about Enterprise Season 3 is that they attempt to do standalone stories that have some continuity to the Zindi arc.
Sure.
But they have a clear start and a clear finish, more like a traditional Star Trek episode would, in terms of the singular story that they're telling in the 42 minutes that we get.
Yeah.
So this one, however, I don't know, like, if you take one, we haven't gotten to it yet. I think it's coming up soon, North Star, which has a strong story. This is standalone.
Yeah.
Versus this one, do you feel like this story stands on its own enough to even be here? Or the elements that progress the story, like finding out that there are at least 50 spheres, could that just have been told as part of another story? It feels like we make an unnecessary pit stop here to me.
I think you have said that very well. I do think that this feels like a story that you could have inserted other plot points of it into other episodes and kind of come to the same conclusion, really. I mean, in all honesty, this episode really could have been all about figuring out the mystery of the spheres.
Yeah, right.
And you didn't even have to do this weird Beauty and the Beast thing, because really what the episode feels is very A and B storyline. And A and B storyline barely connect with one another. Mm-hmm. And the A storyline of Hoshi does lead us on into the rest of the series for the season. And yet the way that it's happening is kind of so uninteresting and not well executed that the more interesting storyline is actually the pit stop at the spheres and learning about them and realizing, oh my gosh, there are way more of these things than we absolutely thought possible. And it adds to the mystery of what's creating the expanse itself and who would want to do this. And you could have gotten the whole going to the settlement from the spheres, you know, that information could have been there, you know. And so I just feel like they really had this idea of wanting to do the Beauty and the Beast. And unfortunately stuck to their guns in that. And, you know, this is another place where you're trying to fill space. And the space you're filling is we need 22, 24 episodes a season. And
So this season is shorter. It's 24 instead of 26. But I feel like you could probably tell the Zindi story in maybe 12 episodes. if you wanted to just tell the Zindi story, right? And then you would tighten up. Now, I don't really want them to do that because then we would lose interesting episodes like North Star or even Twilight, which is a really good episode. We would lose those types of stories, and I love those stories. But I do think that there are times like this one where you feel like they're trying to stretch out because they got to fill these 24 slots. So how do we do it? And this story would have felt right at home on The Next Generation. But I think here it needs to service the overall arc a little bit more, or it needs to be so strong on its own that you don't mind taking a break for a week from it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the hard part about this one too is that they're not really trying to take a break necessarily from the storyline. They're trying to work this one into the storyline. Mm-hmm. They're definitely trying to make this feel cohesive with the rest of the season. And I think, again, half of the episode feels like that.
Mm-hmm.
Less than half of the episode feels like that. And then the other half, you're just getting this weird, uneasy feeling. Mm-hmm. I'm not oversensitive, you know, but it just, you know, if something does make me uncomfortable, that probably means there is something wrong with the portrayal in the episode. And so,
yeah, I'm the same way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This does make me uncomfortable.
Yes. Well, and one of the things I think has made us friends for so long, even though we have different worldviews in some ways, is that there are a lot of things we see very similarly.
Of course.
And so, because again, the sphere part is really actually very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they come across this mystery with Archer and T'Pol working together, and then, of course, Archer and Trip working together on the sphere, I think that all of that's really interesting. It would have been fascinating, I think, to actually even explore inside the spheres more here and allow us to maybe get the sense that maybe some spheres have more information and stuff than others do, or something. I thought you were going to say
they have more junk that no one moved out and their rent.
But I just think that would have been in all of that. I think you could have created a very interesting story without having to go down this kind of strange road that they do. And so,
I feel like here, even going to the second sphere and the shuttlecraft starts floating off into space, so we get target practice, and then in like the classic kind of movie TV action scene, when they do blast the shuttle and it falls back to the sphere, it happens to roll and roll and stop just right in front of them with the door positioned perfectly. You know, it's almost like a joke that it would happen that way. But even that visit, like I'm not sure that is really needed to advance the sphere story, because it's really the final bit when they finally went to T'Pol kind of uncovers what's going on with this network of spheres.
Well, because
that's the key of it for me.
What's really strange is that you get the feeling like they actually go in and explore the sphere, and or they're just getting closer scans of this sphere.
Yeah,
and
put the scanner right up to the shell.
Yeah,
and scan through.
Which you know, again, all of that is I think very. It's much more interesting part of this story, and so, yeah, one of the things that you kind of mentioned on the outline was just the way in which Enterprise is kind of showing off, because this is the first one to get shown in HD. And I think they're really getting an opportunity to show what they can do in HD. So when you look back now, how do you think that works? Do the effects hold up, or do you feel like it definitely feels a part of its time?
Yeah, I think that depends on who you are watching it. So for me, I think it still holds up pretty well, because I can easily put it in the context of the early 2000s and what else was happening in visual effects on a yes. television budget at the time and what computer technology was like at the time.
Yeah.
And I think that they do a quite a nice job. Now, if you're younger and you've just grown up with, you know, Discovery and this type of visual effects, then yeah, it probably looks pretty cheesy to you because obviously it's computer generated graphics or they're using lens effects or things like that to create this stuff. And it's, you know, it's not on par with what you can do today, of course, because today they can make anything look completely real. But, you know, I think for television, what they were doing was really groundbreaking and it was very impressive. And I think it still works quite well today, mm-hmm. even, you know, watching yeah. it now.
I'm not one of those people who gets all up in arms about like, oh, that just doesn't look great. It's like mm-hmm. every time is doing what they can when it comes to effects with the tools that they have available, you know, and you know, you think back to the fact that Voyager does the same thing. They're pushing the effects boundaries by utilizing more visual effects. I mean, in fact, the opening credits, mm-hmm. it's all visual effects. It's not a model. It's a VFX shots of that ship and everything mm-hmm. they're going through. So, and some of that looks really good, and some of it doesn't look as good by today's standards. But I'm not going to hold.
Talking about opening credits, do you remember in the Next Generation, the first few seasons, where when you see Saturn and then it kind of flies over this way, and the stars that were between Saturn's ring and the planet, did they moved separately from the background, and then later they fixed it?
Yes. So, I mean, no, I think the show does still look good for what they're trying to do with the technology they had at the time. And, two, I think it's on a TV budget, right?
That's a big key, right? You could do more on a movie budget at this time, but TV budget, that's different.
Exactly. Well, and part of that is because, you know, for a movie budget, you have somebody... you know, at least at that point, you had a VFX company working for months mm-hmm. and months and months and months, maybe a year or more on a film. You know, mm-hmm. these guys are working probably maybe a few weeks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it does still look pretty good. And it's disappointing because I think that the episode... it's sad that this episode, you know, has the look and the feel and everything with the production value, with the castle and all and everything like that. And it just kind of falls mm-hmm. so utterly flat because of the choices that they then make. Mm-hmm. It's pretty frustrating.
I wonder, you know, in some ways it's a psychological thriller. It's going back to the creepy space bachelor thing. It's very troubling to have someone inside your mind all the time, and they're using what they learn to manipulate you. And as the story goes on, that like makes my skin crawl more and more and more. And then,
yeah,
after she discovers the graves, and then he becomes more needy and more insistent that she's going to have to stay there. And then he goes to the extent of pretending to be Archer. And there's like this escalating aggression, invading her thoughts and trying to manipulate her. And, you know, I don't know if the story were completely a standalone story and you didn't have the sphere aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier that this would feel right at home on The Next Generation, where like Troy, because that would be the natural connection, right? Because of the mm-hmm. her empathic abilities. If the story focused entirely on that, and so then you could go a little bit deeper into that invasion of the mind, and then if Hoshi had been written to push back more and be stronger, which she is as a character, but isn't presented that way here.
Right.
You know, maybe this story could have overall been, I don't think, I can't see any situation where I would find this to be a great story, but I think it could be, you know, a good middle ground Star Trek story with a little right. more depth yeah. in the writing and a little more focus yeah. on that A story.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the interesting thing here too is that even when this episode came out, I think we were at a place where if the person had been more upfront with what they were looking for,
mm-hmm.
you know, that could have made for a really interesting, because, you know, I'm thinking of right, the Beauty and the Beast story, and, you know, in that story, you know, you have the character who has been living this life of being hunted his whole life and is protecting mm-hmm. yeah, right. his domain because everybody just wants to, you know, basically either try to kill him or make fun of him or whatever. And so, you know, he keeps her as like the way to keep people away. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you know, turns out that he's not a terrible person after all. Here, I think the most interesting thing about this is that it's not until the very, very end where he lets her go that we get this sense that this guy has any other side to him.
Yeah,
and,
right.
And so
yeah,
there's not exactly. a lot of, and I think that's the thing about this episode is that there's not a lot of nuance in that then, mm-hmm. which doesn't really make the episode work because it just doesn't have, like you were kind of saying, the time to devote to trying to tell this type of story.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, because yeah, he's just presented as being lonely, basically.
Yeah, you know, he's like a lonely creeper.
Yeah, I mean, he explains that he's one of the rare people in his species that has this telepathic ability, and so they are all exiled. Which raises a whole other question of how many other people like him are out there that you might come across. And another question, given that's raised, is what is the range of this little crystal that he has? Because
yeah.
In the script, the directions for the visuals were just like, okay, we're going to have a couple planets and we're going to have some ships and this and that, and it's going to be stock footage. But what they actually put together raises the question of what's the range of this device and
yeah.
how far out can he or someone else like him reach and control people? And of course, that's never addressed, but it makes you wonder. But anyway, even though that stuff is presented, he's basically presented as just being a lonely guy who uses his telepathic abilities to suck in women and then hold them captive until they die. And then he goes and gets another one. And that's yeah. like a very troubling concept. And particularly if
yeah.
you wait until the very end of the story to give any indication that, like you said, that there's another side to him. Because mm-hmm. I hadn't watched this one in quite a while, and I get near the end of the story and I'm thinking like, okay, well, this was all for nothing. They don't get anything from him. And then I remember, oh, okay, well, he does give them some coordinates at the end, but
yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's the coordinates at the end that, you know, it's like, okay, somewhat of a redemption. You know, I think, and this could probably make some people upset, but it's like he reminds me of those creepy guys who all they do is they spend time on the internet at home and mm-hmm. they play computer games and they have zero life and they are lonely and they kind of wonder why. It's like, that's who this guy kind of feels like in that mm-hmm. sense. Although, in some ways, you know, he's been exiled to this.
Right. In his case, he doesn't have a choice.
But that's the other thing, is that that's not true. Is that he does have a choice because he doesn't have to be on this planet alone because he could go find another planet with other people.
But does he have the ability to leave the planet?
I don't know. Yeah. I mean,
I get the feeling he doesn't, or else he would have.
Maybe he doesn't, it does still seem like you don't have to be stuck on this planet by yourself. You could like go find other people, you know.
Well, he could bring a ship there like he did Enterprise and then ask them to take him somewhere, right? Yeah. That's 100% something he could do.
I mean, he never thought of that. Not very smart. So anyway, I think us just having this conversation lets you know just kind of how many, I think, plot issues there actually are with this episode, where it's one of those where it's incredibly clear we have to have a certain amount of episodes per season. This one just has to get out, so it has to get done. So we throw it together, and which is interesting, like you mentioned, that this is written by a woman. Mm-hmm. It's directed by a woman, which very strange, especially since Roxana Dawson is actually a very good director for Star Trek.
Fantastic director,
And yet this is just an episode that I think from start to finish really barely works anywhere that it is.
Yeah. The only thing is that I'm not sure that it was just thrown together, because all that set design and all had to take significant planning and time. So I think it's just like a misguided concept.
Yeah, I agree.
From the start. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I think there are some concepts that kind of work better than others, especially, I think, for Star Trek, right? I think this is one that it falls a little flat. So,
yeah. Well, any final thoughts? I think those are our final thoughts probably, but if you have any more, tell me what's your rating for this.
So it's frustrating because this is an episode that it does feel like there wasn't a ton of thought put into it. And yet, like you said, this probably is an episode that had a lot of thought put into it, at least from the production side, having to create all these new sets, all this kind of stuff. And it's disappointing because, you know, I think up until this point for season three, at the most part, it's been going at a relatively good clip. And you get to this episode and it just almost seems to grind to a halt. And it's like, we really did take a pit stop at the Buc-ee's, and it's like, we got lost in, you know, the apparel section and we can't find our way out, you know? And it's just like, okay, what is going on? For those who don't know, Buc-ee's is a massive gas station in Texas and in the South. And when I say massive, I do mean massive, like mini mall size gas station. And so, yes, it's easy to get stopped at that pit stop at a Buc-ee's and be there for like 3 or 4 hours. it's crazy. Their jerky is great. Anyway, that's beside the point.
Their jerky is great.
It is really good. They make their own jerky. And so, but that's what this episode does feel like, where we just kind of get lost and we can never really find our way out. And yes, by the time that we get to the end of the episode, it is going to lead us somewhere interesting, right? Because the next episode, I think, is The Shipment, remember correctly? And it's a great episode because we really kind of get back into high gear with what we're doing with the season. And so, but yeah, this one just really falls flat. And I'd say it's probably, and I hate to do this, but it's like a 1.5 out of 5 cocktail dresses. So.
All right. So my final thoughts beyond what I've said already is, maybe I don't have anything else too much other than, I felt more and more uncomfortable as the episode went on. And
yeah, agreed.
I kind of feel like for Star Trek, if you're going to present something like that, then there needs to be something more to it than just to make the viewer uncomfortable. And I don't know that we actually got that deep into it. And I love Hoshi as a character, and I wish that they... And they do later in the season, for sure. I wish they would portray her consistently as a growing and a strong character. I just can't buy the concept of the story from the beginning, because I can't believe that she would be sucked into this in the first place, thinking about just kind of her reaction to stuff when they first get down there to the castle. So one thing I did want to mention, though, we talked about the Beauty and the Beast connection to the story. I do like that in sickbay, when Hoshi asks Phlox, isn't it about feeding time for his critters there? And he says, I'll take care of it after I get you settled. She says, would you mind? I'm really not that tired. And he says, be my guest. Yeah. So I just love that they got be my guest into the actual dialogue of the episode.
Yeah. So they probably worked on that one way too long.
They may have intentionally worked that in. Yeah. Someone did. At least I hope so.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just a tale as old as time. An episode that, you know, just doesn't work the way you want it to. So,
yeah. And like Bill, Hoshi only wears her sexiest dresses in exile. All right. So I'm going to give this episode 2 talking teapots.
Excellent. You know, that would have livened the episode up, actually.
It really would have. Well, the visual effects weren't that advanced yet, Matthew.
Oh, would it cost them a fortune?
It would have cost them a fortune to have a
talking teapot. Why are these animated teacups running around?
All right, everyone. We would love to hear your thoughts on Exile. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to Facebook and join the Babel Conference. That is our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. So if you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post there on the timeline for this episode, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us an email. Go to our website, trek.fm/contact. Use the form you find there. Choose to send to a show and choose Warp 5, and that will come to Matthew and me by email. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not picking out the perfect outfit for your next trip down to a mysterious frozen castle, where can people find you?
Well, it's going to take me a while, guys, so give me a minute. But you can find me all over social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, here on the network, you'll find me all over the place outside of Warp 5. We've got other Star Trek shows we're talking about, Chris and I, so please check those out. We'd love that. And the 602 Club, where we're talking about all the franchises outside of Star Trek that we love. So please check that out as well. You also follow me on the Nerd Party Network with 2 shows. One is called Owlpost. Talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then you can find me on Aggressive Negotiations with the great John Mills, as we're talking about Star Wars each and every week. And Chris, when you're not trying to get that bounce of the shuttle pod to land right in front of your feet without crushing you, where can people find you?
I know, I've tried it over and over and over. You should see the surface of the sphere in front of me. It's like scratched to hell.
I was going to say, you should see how many times he's gotten a concussion, but you know.
Yeah, when I'm not doing that, you can find me elsewhere on the network. As you mentioned, doing all those shows with you, talking about all sorts of Star Trek series, on the Orb, on To the Journey, Saddle Up, The Artificial Tango. And you can find me in many episodes in the back catalog as well. And you can find me on social media if you'd like to chat. My username everywhere is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. And if you'd like to help us keep this rewatch and everything else we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you so much to everyone who is helping us out now. Well, Matthew, I'm looking forward to checking out the shipment with you next time.
Well, Chris, I can't wait for that to happen. So let's go.